Shishak. Hold the hand of him.
Do we get a
chaylik
with your bracha?
So, well, let's turn to Mishlei, Perek Yud Zayin, Pasuk Yud Aleph. Continues Shlomo HaMelech in Pasuk Yud Aleph, Ach Meri Yavakesh Ra, Amalach Achzor Yishulach Bo. The Meri, Loshen of Amarida, has someone who rebels against whom? And the Metzudas David understands it's rebelling against none other than Hashem Yisbarach Chalila V'chas, writes the Metzudas David. Mi shekol devar ach lamros b'Hashem. Someone, all of his words really his thoughts and actions as well, everything is done solely to rebel against Hashem. Hu mevakesh ro la'atzmo b'olam hazeh, is a person who really is seeking evil for himself. He's asking for it in this world. Malach achzor yishulach bo. Therefore, it's what? It's an angel who is cruel and callous who's going to be sent his way to mete out various forms of punishment. So although the Metzudas David doesn't address the definition of a malach, again, you're rebelling against God. God is going to send either an actual angel, or if he doesn't send an actual angel, he's going to send shlichim, hari shluchim l'mokam. Hashem has many messengers. And thus, he's going to send a messenger to go ahead and mete out punishment. Now, we know sometimes in a Chumash, a Malach is a reference to an actual angel, and sometimes it's a reference to Stam a Shliach, an emissary, a messenger. First time, of course, we had it as a popular discussion at the beginning of Parshas Vayishlach. Vayishlach begins, Vayishlach Yaakov Malachim Lefanov El Esav Ochiv Arza Seir Sedei Edo. And before that, the momentous encounter between Yaakov and his brother Esav. So what does Yaakov do? He sends Malachim in front of him towards his brother Esav before he is set to go and meet up with him. And we know that from here the Ramat says, myself is in Labanim. We learn how to act towards our adversaries, towards our enemies. And based on the way the Yaakovino act, you send a present, you daven, v'chulei. So who are these Malachim? Rashi says, two words, Vayishlach Yaakov Malachim. A Malachim Mamish, quoting a Medrash of Reish Yisrabah, Parashah, and Hegen Oz Dalit. Rashi says he sent actual angels, and the Mepharshim explained that there were celestial angels accompanying Yaakov Avinu, and Yaakov Avinu, the Bechir Shabbos, he had use, he could actually utilize these Malachim, so he sends these Malachim with the following, Vayetzav Osam, Lemar, Kosom, Ladoni, Leisav, etc. A fascinating Rashi. Asks Rosh Shimshon Ashtapolio, the famous Makubal, the Kabbalist who died in Xeris Tachmatat. He says, what's Rashi telling me? Malachim Mamish. Vayishlach Yaakov Malachim, Malachim Mamish. First of all, Rashi, just tell me Mamish then. Don't tell me Malachim Mamish. Literally Malachim. That's an interesting word to use, Malachim Mamish, literal Malachim. Very often Rashi says, shoot, okay, Mashmal, just take the Pasuk literally. What's Rashi getting? Malachim, Malachim, Mamish. Writes Rosh Shimshon Ashtapolio, Rashi wants you to know the identity of these Malachim. These Malachim are whom? Mem, Mem, Shin. Michael, Malkiel, and Shinandiel. These are the three Malachim, the three angels that were escorting Yaakov. It gets even better. How did Rashi know that? Explains Rosh Shimshon Ashtapolio. Because Rashi looked at the Gematria. Avayishlach Yaakov Malachim yields Gematria 677. And that equals exactly the gematria of those three names of the Malachim, Michael, Malkiel, and Shinandiel. 677. And writes Rosh Hashanah Ashtapolio. And Rashi know, especially when Rashi gets so excited about such a gematria. And it gets even better. Rashi sees the words Vayishal Yaakov Malachim. He says it's Gematria 677. And Rashi, we know, is typically the Pshuto Shemikra Riba. He always comes to say Pashim Shots. If you were writing Rashi, what would you say you meant? Vayishal Yaakov Malachim. It meant Shluchim. It meant the messengers. And yet Rashi, who is so often going on the heels of the Pashim Shot, Rashi deviates from the norm and he says, no, it means actual Malachim, heavenly angels. And how did Rashi know then? Writes the Makubal, the Gematria. Vayishlach Yaakov Malachim 677 equals exactly Michael Malkiel Shenandiel, and that's the reference Malachim Mamish, those were the three angels. And still Rashi's not done. The idea writes Rosh Hashanah Ashtapolio. How does Rashi know that it's got to be real angels? Because real angels are the ones who always come to assist the tzaddikim amongst us. And thus, what do we say every day in Shmoneh Esrei and before we start Shmoneh Esrei in Shacharis? Ezras Avoseinu. Who are the Ezras Avoseinu? Who always came to assist, to help out Avoseinu? Avraham, Yitzchak, and Yaakov. Ezras Malachim. Who are these Malachim? Malkiel, Michael, and Shinandiel. Ezras, Ayin, Zion, Rei, Sof, Gematria, 677. Gematria, Vayishlach, Yaakov, Malachim. Gematria, Michael, Malkiel, Shinandiel. Ezras Avoseinu. They're the ones who always come to assist our forefathers. So, Malach over here also, according to the Matzidus David, it means Hashem is going to send a cruel and cowl as a Malach. That's not clear. It could be Harbi Shluchim Lamakam Stam, a messenger. God has many different ways of carrying out punishments. Or it could be an actual Malach, writes the Rokeach, who is the Malach of Zori, the Malach Amoves. Person's asking for it. A person who is always Ach Yevakesh Ra. The Marie, the rebellious one, the wayward individual who is constantly rebelling against Hashem Yisborach, is Yevak Yeshua. He is always seeking and pursuing evil, and therefore you're leaving Hashem with no choice but to send a cruel and callous Malach who's going to be sent his way. So that's the Mitzvah David. We're talking about rebelling against HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And the Vilna Gaon, in his commentary on Mishlei as well, understands that Marie is someone who rebels against the ways of the Torah. Someone who is abandoning the precepts, the commands of the Torah. That person is always seeking evil because the Torah is the way to find all the tov in the world. If you abandon that, then you're seeking exclusively a path of evil. Also aligns with the Torah, Kodesh Baruch Hu. Rashi takes a whole different route. Rashi says, who is the Mari? Ach Mari Yavake Shra. Writes Rashi, Kolomer, as if to say, Misha kol devorov Mari visarvonus, who Yavake Shra Tam. Who's the one who's always seeking evil? Someone who doesn't like to follow orders. Someone who doesn't want to listen to anyone. Someone who is not just rebelling against HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Someone who has a rebellious attitude towards everyone with whom they come in contact. They're not interested in listening and obeying orders. They're not interested in paying attention to anyone. That's someone who is constantly seeking evil. That's not a way to go through life, never wanting to go ahead and pay attention to anyone. But most Mepharshim do understand, like them, it's double like the girl, that really the focus is on someone who's rebelling against HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Who's the first person to openly rebel to the extent that it became part and parcel of his very name, of his core essence? Nimrod. Why was he called Nimrod? So Rashi tells us, Yodea Esribono v'neskaving Nimrod bo. It's one thing for a person to go on and say, Yatino Shanishpo, you don't listen to God. It's another thing to go on and say that Yodea Esribono, he knows his Creator, v'neskaving Nimrod bo, and he wants nothing else but to rebel against the Creator. I mentioned the story years ago, my wife and I were placed in Eretz Yisrael, and we were meeting some other couples, and one couple told us that they had a friend who just gave birth, a secular Israeli couple, and they gave birth to a son. What did they name the son? Nimrod. I said, why in the world did you name the son Nimrod? They said, what do you mean? They went through the Chumash. They don't know Rashi. They weren't looking at Rashi. So they saw what's Nimrod described as? He's an Ish Gibor Chayim. He is a Gibor. He's the first one described as a Gibor. On the face of the Chumash, they said, we want our son to be a Gibor. So they named him Nimrod, but they didn't look at Rashi. Rashi tells us, what's Nimrod? Lashon Merida, rebelling against God. Unfortunately, there are many Nimrods walking around that soul. People just don't know. They don't know Rashi. They don't know Torah Shabbat. So they named the children Nimrod. Hi, they don't know. You have to change the name. Ach Maria Yavakeshua Malach Hazori Yeshulach Bo. So someone who's rebelling against God, someone who doesn't listen to God ever, someone who doesn't listen to the Torah, is Mamela, even if not actively, Derech Mamela, they are always going to be pursuing evil. Malach Hazori Yeshulach Bo, and a cruel callous, whether it's an actual angel, whether it's the Malach HaMavis, Rachmanu Letzlan, or whether it's Harbi Shluchim Namakom, that's going to be sent this way. We mentioned in the past the Ritva, Meseches Tainis, Daf Yud Beis. Ritva says, Harbi Shluchim Namakom, God has so many vehicles at His disposal, sometimes He can go and send you a nightmare. People wonder, why do we have nightmares? He says, nightmares is a wake-up call. It's not Stamazai. We know that so much of the nightmares are things that we're exposed to, the different media outlets that might make their way into our Chushim throughout the course of a day. But in the end of the day, we have nightmares. Why? Because Harbi Shluchim Lamakom, Hashem sends it very often as a wake-up call. So many things in His arsenal, Kaviyachol, to go in and alert us to put us back in the right path.
Rabbi?
Yeah?
An achzer is a personality trait. Malachim don't really have personalities.
Right. So again, it's not personal.
Be a messenger more than a real.
In economy, but we still, just like we have anthropomorphisms,
right,
bending the mouth, so we can have a malach azori, like the Rokechan says, a malach amovis, a malach that Hashem assigns to do something in a cruel and callous fashion. They're not inherently cruel and callous.
Right.
But Hashem might send one to go ahead and carry out that shlichus.
Are we supposed to treat nightmares as messages from Hashem?
It doesn't mean we treat nightmares. Now, again, sometimes if a person reads a scary book and they have nightmares about the scary book, you know, very often you have a clear association. But when a nightmare comes out of the blue, very often it could be a wake-up call. It doesn't mean that this nightmare is going to come true. It doesn't mean that any connection at all. And the Ritva makes that clear. Doesn't mean Allah Maisa. We pasken in the Gemara Brochas, and the ninth parak is all about dreams, a lot about dreams, but in Daf and Vav we pasken that Dibre Chalomos Lo Malin Velomo Reedin. We don't pay attention to dreams. That means if a nightmare happened, it doesn't mean you believe it. But why did Hashem give you the nightmare? It could be that it's a wake-up call. So it doesn't mean that the events that unfolded in the context of the nightmare are going to be true. You don't even have to be choshish for them. But it's a wake-up call.
Can't angels have one emotion at a time?
Right, but angels don't have real emotions. They have one job at a time. Or as we explained, the Tel Zerav in the Gemara Megillah Daf Yud and Sanhedrin Lamed Zayin, Bikshu Malachi Asher Islam or Shira, that they couldn't sing Shira because they wouldn't be feeling the pain of the mitzvah of the Maaseh Yod and Tov Vayam. So when Hashem allows them to experience an emotion, but inherently they have no emotions. It's the Gemara Shabbos Pei Chesem and Beis, that v'chi kina yesh b'neichem, v'chi sina yesh b'neichem. The Malachim don't have kina, they don't have jealousy, they don't have hatred. Hashem might have them act in a way that displays such an emotion, just like they carry out a job.
Of course, we just the definition of Marie being a rebel, because wouldn't it feel like an embittered person? It comes from Mar, right? So wouldn't it be someone who's bitter, which would imply that, like, it's not rebel.
Right. I said that's more an Ishmar. An Ishmar would be a Lashon of Merirus. Meri is Lashon Lamros. Lamros, the infinitive Lamros, is to rebel, is to go against. So an Ishmar, someone who's Mar. In fact, the name Miriam, the Rokeach does right. Where'd she get the name Miriam? Because she was born during the Tkufa, during that period of Vayamaru Eschayeya. Vayamaru, that's a Lashon of Merirus. How about Maria as the noun, as not an Ishmara. Maria is someone who is in a state of being lamrot, being someone who rebels. Marida is a more forceful rebellion. I mean, that's a lotion of Marie.
Rabbi, but isn't sometimes on dreams, sometimes things that, not bad dreams, but that will make you aware of things to come or of, I mean, my mother had dreams where at one point we were left behind and she dreamt that a very, very strong brother-in-law came to get us. And when she got up in the morning, that was during the war, when she got up in the morning, she said to us, don't despair, we will get across the ocean. And I think that dream was
so that could be as well. In other words, Hashem uses the vehicle of dreams. We just targeted one area of it. The same Gemara Sugya says that a chalom is echad mishishim b'nevua. A dream is 1/60th of nevua. The Marshal explains it doesn't mean literally it's 1/60th. It means just like a drop of milk when it falls into a meat stew is bato b'shishim. This is echad b'shishim, which means it's not bato, which means there is an aspect of prophecy to it as well. Sure, you can have dead people of some sefer as a tshuva, and then it's writes in Hemek Shalem the Shaldos, if dead people come to you in a dream and talk to you and give you messages, especially if they come a chazak of 3 nights in a row, you have to listen to them. You have to listen to them. There's a famous maisa that happened a few years ago, was actually written up in the secular Israeli papers. They wrote it up as well, happened many years ago, that there was an elderly couple from the south, some small town in the southern part of Eretz Yisrael. And they were visiting a relative near Yerushalayim, and during that visit, the husband passed away. So they figured instead of going back and schlepping into the small town, they had some relatives anyway in Yerushalayim, so they just took a burial plot. Anyone who's a citizen, you get a burial plot in Eretz Yisrael. So they took a burial plot and they buried him, whoever it was, in Eretz Yisrael. And then what happened? The husband came to his son in a dream and said to his son that I was inadvertently buried next to a rasha. You have to exhume my body and reinter me. So the son didn't pay attention. After all the hassle and all that, we're not going to go and exhume the body. And the some sefer writes in the tshuva that if a mace comes to you and tells you to do something, the chavodo shel mace, especially if they come 3 times in a row, but even if they only come once, you have to be chayshish for it. So anyway, this son didn't pay any attention. He figured, okay, what's the big deal? goes back to sleep the next night. The father comes again in a dream and says, you have to go and exhume my body. I'm buried next to Russia and I can't be buried next to a Russia. 3 nights in a row he comes. Finally, they don't know what to do. They go to Rav Aji Yosef. By the time they get the Shiloh to Rav Aji Yosef, it's already been, time has already passed since the burial took place. And they tell Rav Aji, and Rav Aji says, the mace came and told you that his body needs to be reinterred. Lechlodo shameis, we do hilachat samos, we'll move, we'll reinter somebody. And it came to you 3 nights in a row. I paskin, you tell the government we have to go and exhume the body. Meanwhile, by the time they got the permission to exhume the body, it was already time that they said the body would have decomposed. They had to put on special suits to be handling the body. Remember, the body is buried without an oren. It's not the same thing. When you have the body in an oren, it's not in an oren anymore. So they need to put on special body suits and be able to... They open up the grave and they take hold of the body. It's already weeks passed after the person passed away. And they discover the person was a sholem legamri. His body did not decompose one iota. And Rav Aji Yosef was involved and he said that's the Eidos, and that's why he was given permission in Shemayim to come in a dream to his son, because his body was 100% b'shlemus, and that's why he's not allowed to bury a tzaddik next to a Rosh. It's a begam in his covet to be buried next to a Rosh. And Rav Aji Yosef paskin, once we see that he was granted permission in Shemayim to come to his son in a dream, and that it came 3 nights in a row, and that his body was a sholem, you tell the city they ought to come out and bury him, take him back to his hometown. Because they had a Lamed Vovnik who was living in their midst and they didn't even know that. Go out and bring out, and the whole city came out to greet him, and they had a tremendous covet achron as they reinterred him in their town once they discovered what a big tzaddik he was. So a lot of times you can have messages like that. Things come in dreams. Somebody told me a story recently, a true story as well, that there was an individual in his 30s from the West Coast. And he went years ago to Rabbi Aaron Leib Steinman, and he told Rabbi Aaron Leib Steinman that he wants to be involved in supporting his kollel. He was going through a tough time in his life, and he said even though he wasn't keeping all the mitzvahs, he wanted to have a chelik in a Yisachar Zvul. So Rabbi Aaron Leib Steinman told him, he says, okay, you can contribute to my kollel. He says, how much should I give? And they worked out a deal. He was a wealthy guy, he was giving $7,000 a month. $7,000 a month he was sending to support Kolam under the auspices of Rabbi Leib Steinman. Rabbi Leib Steinman said, that's a tremendous sechus for him. Tremendous sechus. He wasn't keeping a lot of mitzvahs, but it's a huge sechus for him. He went back to Los Angeles about 8-9 months after he started this deal with Rabbi Leib Steinman. He got into a car accident and he was killed. Guy in his 30s, a from guy from home. I heard this story from somebody who was involved in the episode, who was at the Levaya. And what happened, the person, he got passed away, obviously, in the car accident. And he came, after the Shiva, he came to his best friend in Los Angeles in a dream. And he told the best friend, he says, I want you to know that in Shamayim, I didn't have so many zechuyos because I didn't live such a great life. But my biggest zechus that saved me, I was supporting the kolam, was supporting the learning by Rabbi Aaron Leib Steinman. Making a sacrifice of sending such a great amount of money every single month, even though I didn't even do it for a year, but Hashem knows that I would have continued it as long as I could. He said, that zechus has saved me more than any other zechus in Shammai. He says, but now I want you to know that not all my blood was collected at the scene of the accident. Because a lot of my blood, that still remains in the car where the accident took place. Please go and take that blood and bury it with me, because my soul cannot rest until all of that is buried along with me. So the friend didn't know what to do with it. The friend himself said, oh, this is crazy. I'm not going to pay any attention. And it came to him 3 nights in a row. And once he came to him 3 nights in a row, he knew that something must be. He went to a big Rav in Los Angeles. And the Rav, actually was Rabbi Gershon Vess, was involved. And Rabbi Gershon Vess has sent in the Shiloh. And he was told, absolutely, you go ahead and try and get the blood. And there might have been maybe some body parts still left in the car. And they call up the towing company and they find out that the car was in the demolition yard. And the person who answered the phone call said, this is unbelievable. You're asking to go ahead and come with his Chevra Kadisha, with their equipment into the car. And a few hours, we were going to be destroying that car. And you have a few hours to come. The car was already in the pound, about to be demolished. And they had a few hours. He came quickly with the Chevra Kadisha, and they scraped out the blood and whatever remnants were there. that ended because the vehicle wasn't touched. It was the scene of a crime, and they were just going to go and not a crime of a car accident. They were just going to destroy the car, and they were able to take it and bury it. And the person came back to him in a dream and said, "Thank you for bringing my soul to rest." And he had all that buried with him. So you never know. Hashem uses dreams, vehicles of dreams, messages can come. You never know. You got to pay attention to dreams in a certain sense. But halacha lemaisa, the Ran and other Rishonim already address, if someone comes to you in a dream and says that another person owes you money, and that's motzi mechal l'maraya, you can't say, "I dreamt that you owe me money." And that doesn't work. Motzi mechal l'maraya. But the truth is, if Stumra says you should be choshesh, Sam Sefer says, halacha lemaisa, what if you dream that you pledged money to a certain organization? We have a White Shul dinner coming up, and we know subliminal advertising. So what if you go to sleep tonight and you dream I'm donating $5,000 to the White Shul? So you dream, if you don't say anything in the dream, you have nothing to worry about. If you say something in a dream, some anything you say in a dream doesn't have any relevance, but the Sam Sefer says, you should be choshesh, that if you said a nether in a dream, you should be choshesh to carry it out. You're not to mechoyev to carry it out, but if you remember vividly that in the dream, I'm giving $5,000 to the White Shul, then you got to give it. So there's an envelope outside for all those who are interested. But you have to be saying it. If you actually say it, so I had a chavrusa years ago, and he told me that he woke up one morning and he remembered vividly a dream that he pledged $300 to Kamenetz Yeshiva in Eretz Yisrael. He doesn't know why. It's not like he had any connection to Kamenetz. My chavrusa told me this. He remembers vividly in his dream, and that he pledged $300 to Kamenetz. He went and asked Rav Moshe Sturmach, and he told him, "You should be chayshish for Nechsam Sefer." And he gave the next day $300 to Kamenetz Yeshiva. And so you got to be careful. Some things, though, we definitely do pay attention in the dream. Continuing onwards, Pasuk Yud Beis, Pogush Dov, Hashoko Beish Val Ksil Beivalto. Pogush Lifkosh, better to meet up and have an encounter with a dove, with a bear, who is shakul, lo shakul, without its children, meaning what? It's missing its cubs. And we know that a bear without its cubs is furious. You never walk in between a mother bear and her cubs. It's better to meet up with a bear, barren, bereft of its own children, of its cubs, rather than meeting up with a fool in a state of his idiocy, in a state of his foolishness. Better to meet up with a bear. Now I can tell you a few years ago, when I was in camp, I had a levaya here in the morning. I said, I had to be here for a shachar, so I had to get up about 4:30 in the morning. And the mountain roads, a lot of them pitch black, as you can imagine. Only lights I had on were the headlights in the front of the car. And as I'm pulling out of White Road by Camp Simcha, a huge black bear right in front of my car. And my wife was calling it, that just wanted to make sure that I was getting out of camp okay. I said, "Honey, no problem. It's just me and the bear right here on White Road. A big bear, but thank God there were no cubs around. I just stopped the car. I let the bear cross the other side of the road, and not to start up with him or her. And that was it. Pitch black, just that black bear right in the headlights. Better to meet up with a bear than to meet up with a fool and his foolishness. And that's why we have the example of the bear, because a bear, bereft of its children, we know, becomes furious. Better to go ahead and have such an encounter than to meet up with a fool. Writes Rashi. What's this? Because what? Because the seal, the fool, is going to turn you away from Hashem Yisbaruch. It's going to destroy your whole life. It's going to affect you not only in Olam Hazeh, it's going to affect you in Olam Haba, and that's why it is far worse. And that's Rashi, and let's take a look at Mitzudas David. Mitzudas David as well. Mutav Livkosh Be'ish, Dov Shokomi Banov, a bear that is bereft of its children, Asher Darko La'arog, Asher Yivkosh, Bavur Maria Soleil, it has such a bitterness of heart, so it puts a bear in a state of fury, and it's out to kill. Even so, im kol ze yoser tov sheyivkosh hu bo, better to meet up with such a bear, with an indignant, an infuriated bear, sheyivkosh bo ish ksil ba'isi dabri ivalto, lahasis la'avera, at a time when he's speaking his foolishness, when he wants to seduce you, when he wants to lure you into sin, that can destroy you not only in Olam Hazeh, that could destroy you in Olam Haba. And that, of course, is far worse. That's why the Chavetz Chaim writes, and when he speaks Lashon Hara, we know the tongue is mightier than the sword. It could go in and kill a person in Olam Hazeh and Olam Haba, Chalila V'chas. That's Rashi, that's the Mitzvah David. And finally, we'll take a look at the Malbim. The Malbim says, why is he worse? This idea, fleshed out by the Malbim. The Ksil, the fool, who meets up with a person in a state of foolishness is mesukan yosim and adov shokol. Why? Because the dove is only mesukan the guf, but the ksil, the fool, is mesukan the nefesh. He's destroying the neshama. And adds the malbim. The dove is korea sogol ibel lotzei adam. Who korea sogol ibel ach neshami bel sasegas. What does he do? The bear might rip open a heart, chalil vachas, in order to get the blood, but he wants to put sveikas, he wants to put heresy and questioning God inside your heart. Not only that, sometimes the man can emerge victorious. Sometimes you have people who are rachmanatha mauled by a bear and they could survive. Sometimes people could outsmart the bear. You won't be able to go ahead and ever beat that fool in his foolishness. He's not going to listen to you. Plus, sometimes the bear can leave you alone. You can play dead. And the bear can go ahead and run after somebody else. A fool is never going to go ahead and leave you behind. It's like the two campers are going, and Joe says to Bob, I just got a new pair of sneakers. He says, what's so special about these sneakers? He says, they're really light, and I can run really fast. He says, so what's so great about that? He says, well, if we ever meet up with a bear, I says, it'll enable me to run fast. He says, yeah, but how do you know you're going to escape? He says, I just need to run faster than you. And the other day, though, there are ways to outsmart cases of people who can outsmart the bear, but you can't outsmart the fool. Ksil is someone who, the Malbim has already discussed that elsewhere, Mishlei. And we're not talking about someone who's not sharp, someone who's not astute. We're talking about someone who knows. And that's why he's out there to be Mesis. A fool is someone who, and why is he foolish? Because he knows the right thing to do. It's not a teepesh. We're talking about someone who knows the right thing to do, and he still wants to be foolish and abandon it, even though he knows he's playing with his own Malbim. And he's going to try and seduce and lure other people into his way of thinking as well. Vosigid Gimel. Someone who repays tachas tova, when someone does a good, a favor, an act of loving kindness, and you pay him or her back with an act of wickedness, then lo tomush ro mi beso, that's never going to leave you. Lo tomush hator mi picha, over here it's used in the sense it's never going to depart, it's never going to leave your house, meaning ra, unfortunately wickedness will go and fill the house if you're someone who can't be a makir tov. Let's take a look at the Rabag. Rabag writes, somebody does a good favor for you, and you pay her back with an act of evil, Roy Shalotosarami Beso. It's fitting that evil should never leave your house. You're someone who doesn't just, it's one thing to not do acts of kindness, but to repay kindness with evil, that's a double whammy, and that's is going to go ahead and cause Ra to come inside your house. Why? No one's going to do favors for you anymore. If everyone sees how you repay, then when you do favors for them, they're going to say, you know what, stay away from that person. So Mamela, no good's going to come into your house. No one's going to want to visit you. No one's going to want to do anything good for you. Number two is, Hasiba Shenis, Kizeha Onesh Roishi of Olam Hashem Yisbarach. Why? And because someone who has such a tchunas anefa, such a midah, such a character trait, that's so lowly, it's going to prevent the person from getting any tov, any shleimus. Why? And because we're always machnia, we look around and we say, Hashem, we owe you everything. We have to always be makir tov to Ribbono Shel Olam, who gave us so many good things in this world. And we shall lo yakir lo nashim atov she'mosim lo. If you're not going to recognize the tov that everybody down here in this world does on your behalf, then you're certainly not going to come to recognition that there's a God to whom you owe everything. In the same way, the famous Shaila of the Minchas Chinuch, we have 10 dibros, the Decalogue. Haseres HaDibros, we have 5 and 5. And we know the famous Ramban, 5 on the right, Be'nodom Lamakam, 5 on the left, Be'nodom Lachavero. Why is Kibbut of Aim number 5? On the right hand side, it should be on the left, it's been on the chara, not been on the lamoko. And the idea is, of course, because you can't be machabed Hashem Yisbarach as the ultimate creator until first and foremost you recognize your own biological creators. Writes the Sefer HaChinuch and Parshas Yisro, what's a curse of Tov? Where's the first count? Where's it flushed out in Kibbutz Avayim? You have to be machabed Tov, they brought you into the world, they raised you, you owe them everything. You have to be expressing gratitude. It's all revolving around a curse of Tov. That's the idea of what? To use that as the emtsoi, as the means to be makir tov to Ribbono Shel Olam. Thank your biological creators. And now continue the chain and thank Hashem Yisbarach. It's the same idea over here. If you're not going to be Makir Tov down here, then you're certainly not going to be aware of being Makir Tov to Hashem, who is Chonin Osev, he is a Siba, a Kfir of Hashem Yisbarach. You're going to know Hashem Yisbarach because Hashem is always doing good for us. Ad Kedei Kach. You ever wonder why is the Lashon terminology Hakaras HaTov? What does that mean, to recognize it? What do you mean recognize it? It should be more appropriate than what? Hashlomas HaTov. You should pay it out. Right, Rabbi Yechiel Mochaston in the Sefer Nishmas Kol Chai. You know why it's not Hashlomas HaTov? Because in the end of the day, you can never pay up a good. A boon, an act of loving kindness that's done, that's sent your way. You can never have Hashlomas HaTov. You can never fully pay up. You have to be indebted for the rest of your life because something that someone didn't have to do, and they went out of their way to do it for you, you always have to have the debt of gratitude. Rav Shach, I would always turn down rides. People would offer him rides. Sometimes it was snowing outside and someone wanted to take him a sikh. He says, no, I'd rather one of my family members eat him. Why? He said, because then the rest of my life I'm going to have to remember the act that he did and I'm going to have to be makir tov for the rest of my life for what he did. That's a curse of tov. We can't be mashlim the tov. All we can ever do is be makir. We could just recognize it. And that's what we have to do. We have to recognize the good for what it is and always look to go in and give back through that lens of appreciation. We mentioned in the past a beautiful Rav Hutner. Rav Hutner Pachad Yitzchak and Shavuos Amaymer Zayin says, what happens if people come over to your house? You're hosting guests for Shabbos, and they bring you flowers and they bring you wine. So what do you do? It's Soni Matanos Yechid. Didn't we have that already in Mishlei? Right? 1527, Perek Tezvah Posach of Zayin. What did we read? We discussed that Soni Matanos Yechid, who is the person who is really alive? Soni Matanos Yechid, someone who's really living, is someone who despises getting things for free. What does that mean? So what happens when it's your birthday, when it's your anniversary, and you get a gift? I'm sorry, I don't want it. No, no, Soni Matanos Yechiah. That's it, I don't want it. What do you do? What do you do in such a case? That's up under. So he says, beautiful. He says, why is it Soni Matanos Yechiah? Why is that a person who's alive? Tell me, someone who's Soni Matanos gets schar. Is it tzaddik, gets this type of reward, that type of reward? Out of all the rewards, Shlomo Melech says, if you're a Soni Matanos Yechiah, you will be living. What's that all about? Explains Rav Hutner beautifully. He says, if Hashem just wants to give us a reward, he could have taken our neshamas and placed us right from the very outset in Gan Eden Shemayla. We wouldn't need this world. Why did Hashem take our pure, pristine, holy neshama and attach it to a basic, mundane, material body, and say, go down into this world and do work? You know why? Because Nama Dikisufa. It's the bread of embarrassment. Rabbi Galdi spoke about it. Rabbi Chal Das Munos. We get a much greater geshmak when we earn something. When you earn the paycheck, it means a lot more than getting something gratis. So Hashem says, I want you to work for the Olam Haba. It's going to be so much more meaningful. If you go down to this world, you learn my Torah, you do my mitzvahs, and you daven, and you do chesed, and still kamas and tovim, and you'll feel much better about the ensuing reward in Gan Eden Shemayla. So we want to go and work for it. If you're someone who's oiv matanos, you're not really living. If your whole life is you love getting things for free, then you don't understand the whole yesod of chiyas to begin with. Hashem says, I'm giving you chiyas, I'm giving you life, because the best feeling is when you don't get it for free. But if you love getting things for free, then you're not truly living in the fullest sense of the word. Soni matanos, but if you don't always look to get gifts, if you're a Soni Matanos, then you understand, Yechi, I'd rather work and get it on my own, and that's real chiyas. But what happens when people get your gifts? Rav Hutner says, that's where Hakaras HaTov comes in. Saying thank you is the way of giving it back to them. I'm not going to give you back the flowers, I'm not going to give you back the wine, and certainly not the chocolate. But at the end of the day, it's a thank you. What's the thank you very much? It's that this is replacing that gift. The thank you says, I owe you. I'm indebted to you. It's not the Magiyali. The whole problem is in Magiyali. We mentioned many times, what did Jews used to eat years ago? Rugelach, Kenedelach, Kreplach, Lach. It used to be about you, now it's Bisli, Kefli. It's all about Li, it's all about the foods that have to do with me. It's all about the idea of what thank you says, it's not the Magili. I'm not supposed to get it. You didn't have to give me flowers, you didn't have to give me wine, it's not supposed to come my way. Now that it came my way, I'm going to give it back to you with a thank you, with a Hakaras HaTov. It's a great little book. Came out years ago, 2011. Came out one of my dates with my wife. I think I took her out to a small restaurant in Queens, and nearby was a Barnes & Noble. So every once in a while, I go to the Barnes & Noble, I go to the bargain price books, and I stock up. So this was a little book called A Simple Act of Gratitude. how learning to say thank you changed my life. It's a guy, John Kralik, his life was falling apart, and he decided to go on a crusade of, I'm sending thank you letters, at least one every day of the year. He ended up sending over 730. I want to just thank everybody in my life, and starting with God, of course, but thanking everybody for everything. And he says how it changed his life. Gratitude. Anyone who reads the writings of Adam Grant, famous economics professor, says also giving back philanthropy and gratitude and makes a huge change in your life. He talks, I'll just read you one little section. Who thinks about thanking the guy in Starbucks for giving you the cup of coffee in the morning? He says, I made his day. And he didn't know his name. He listened to someone with a better memory say, Scott. So he wrote a letter to the guy at Starbucks giving him his coffee. Scott, thank you for taking the time each morning to greet me in a friendly way. And it's also so wonderful to me that you took the time and trouble to remember my name. And this day and age, few people make this effort, and fewer still do it in a way that feels sincere. You do both. It really makes a difference to me every day. All the best. And it made Scott's day. And I'm sure he got a little extra in his coffee for a while afterwards. And you will always gain by expressing that gratitude, but he said it changed his inner feeling. Because that curse of Tov, as we pointed out many times, with Chaim Shulevitz's famous vart, at the Mirror Sheshiva, Moshe Rabbeinu couldn't do the first three malchus. Why? Because the water protected him, and the ground covered over the mitzri, and of course the Chaim Shulevitz says, but they're inanimate entities. They don't have das, they don't have a chira chavshis. Not only that, but if you think about it, even if they did have das, why would you owe the water anything? You went in a little boat that floats. He went in a teva. He went in a... See, the water didn't do anything, and the ground, whether it was dirt, anything, he could have covered it with leaves. It happened to be that dirt was there. So there's no real akar satov, and it doesn't have das, it doesn't have a chiro, and still, Moshe says, I'm not going to ever lift a hand to something that helped me out in any way, shape, or form. And why? Because akar satov, explained the Rashid, is more for you than it is for somebody else. It's more because Hashem says, I'm worried about your midos. What type of person are you? Are you a person who expresses gratitude? It's going to make a change, an everlasting change, much more in your personality. And that's the focus of the giver, much more than the recipient. So too the Chacham Tzvi, but Tzvi Ashkenazi says, in Siman Chavov of Tshuvas Chacham Tzvi, you know why you can't steal money from a guy? Gezel Akim we know is also, the Gemara says in Chulim, Tos Akim is Mutter. Gezel Akim is also. If a guy makes a mistake, you go into the supermarket, a guy is your supermarket, and you get $20 back instead of 10, halach l'maisa, you're allowed to keep it. But of course, as a midas chasidus, to go and make a kiddush Hashem, and to go and give it back. A woman called me up, not too long ago, she went to a store, and she got two pairs of the same pants put into the bag, as opposed to one. She called me up and said, can I keep it? So I said, what store was it? It's a guy you're showing store, tos akim is mutter. But I said, imagine the kiddush Hashem, if you go back into the store and say, you know what? For one pair of pants, isn't it worth it to make a kiddush Hashem? I said, go back into the store and say, you know, I'm an Orthodox Jew, and you accidentally gave me two pairs of pants, and really I only paid for one. And Baruch Hashem, she did it, and she made such a beautiful kiddush Hashem. Wow, they couldn't believe it. And what a kiddush Hashem? Tos Akim is mutter, but you can make a kiddush Hashem. It's minus chasidus to go ahead and try and return it anyway. But Gezel Akim is also, you're not allowed to steal money from a guy, you're not allowed to deceive a guy. It says, one blanket statement, lo signofu, you can't steal. So a Chacham Tzvi explained, you think it's because Hashem cares so much about the money of a guy? It's because He cares so much about you. Because if you're a person who's going to start stealing from a guy, then you know what? Then it's not so important anymore. Ah, his money, her money, it's not so important. And you're going to start cutting corners over here. You start with the white lies, and the white lies become the big lies. And the end of the day, it's because Hashem cares about you. And you can't go ahead and be a person who's going to start stealing from other people. That's great. That's a great line. A great line, that's the Emes. And a lot of stealing starts with little small things. You start cutting corners, and that's it. It's because Hashem cares about us more than He cares about the recipient. The mitzvahs are given. The Ramban says, Letzarif menes abrios, to purify us, and therefore that's why Karas HaTov is so essential. So this pasuk, interestingly enough, where's the first case of Karas HaTov in the Chumash? Who was the first one who was a Kafuei Tov? Adam Arishon. Adam Arishon. The first one who was supposed to be a Makir Tov, Bracious, Pragbase, Posekei, what do we know? That nothing is going to grow until there's rain. We know there's Shimon Finkelman and Rabbi Zechariah Wallerstein, they wrote a beautiful book, and of course the Tov, Let There Be Rain. And they explain why they call it Let There Be Rain. Because in that first Rashi, it tells us that of course the Tov, man was created to be a Makir Tov in the Tovas HaGeshamim. and that everything that was created, the tree always was created in a potential form. No grass would sprout, no leaves, no trees, nothing would bud or burgeon or sprout, unless man came along and asked for the rain, and the rain would take everything mikoch lepoel and have it actualized, have it materialize. So you need to have the rains, and the rains aren't going to come until Adam is makir b'tovas hagashamim. He's makir tov in a rains. So what does that mean? That means nothing in the world is going to function. All of gashmiut comes from geshem. That's why it's called gashmiut. No gashmiut will take place until there's geshem, and no geshem will fall until Adam is makir tov in the tov. Why? Because that's the yisod of the bria. The foundation of the Bria is to be Makir Tov. Why? Because it's all thanking Hashem. Hashem didn't have to do anything. Our whole lives are one continuous thank you to the Ribbono Shel Olam. He didn't have to create us. He didn't have to give us this world. So the Yesod of Adam is to be what? To be a Makir Tov. He has to be Makir Tov Asak Hashemim, and that's a Karsa Tov. Now you have a person whose primary task is to daven for the Hashem, is to be Mespalo. That's why Adam is a Mespalo. The hidden letters, the core essence of Adam. Adam is Aleph, Dalet, Mem. Aleph is Aleph, Lamed, Pei. Dalet is Dalet, Lamed, Tav. Mem is Mem, Mem. The hidden secret letters of the words of Adam are Mitpalel. Because the hidden core essence of an Adam is a Mitpalel. Baba Kamadav, Gimel, Mabezim, Tabayin, Mavez, Adam. And the Arba, Avos, Nezikin, Mavez, someone who expresses, Medaber. That's a human being. You have to be Makir Tov. You have to be able to say thank you. And that's the idea of thanking HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And the first one to be Makir Tov is to daven to be a Mespalel and ask Hashem for the rains. Now what happens if that person whose whole existence was founded on a Karsa Tov, and now is a Kofi Tov, and now he's asking for trouble. Where was he a Kofi Tov? After the sin, what happened? How could, I gave you one simple command. How, all he had to do was go 3 hours. According to Brigos, there's 3 hours before Shabbos. 3 hours of not eating, and not only that, the Archaim HaKadosh even suggests, on one opinion is, that it was a Geffen on the Eitz Hadas Tovara. Once this was Taino, once this was a Chita, once this was a Geffen. Archaim HaKadosh says that he would have been able to eat and to drink from the fruits of the Eitz Hadas Tovara had he just made it into Shabbos. Then the Eitz Hadas would have been permitted, and he would have made Kiddush on the Geffen of the Eitz Hadas. The Rechaim HaKadosh writes, but he couldn't wait what happened, and he blames it all on Vayomer Adam Ha'isha, it's all the woman's fault. We mentioned many times, the husband and wife who go to the smorgasbord. I don't know what you need a smorgasbord when you have a 7-course meal for. But the husband and wife go to the smorgasbord, and of course the longest line is always by the meat slicing table. And they're cutting the corned beef and the roast beef and the prime rib and the pastrami, and everyone's waiting along. The husband goes back for doubles and he goes back for triples, goes back for a fourth cutting. And the wife says, honey, aren't you embarrassed? This is your fourth time alone? He says, what do you mean? I blame it all on you. I say, well, it's all for you. Here the first man blames it all on his wife. It's all what? It's all Zatrashi Api the Gemara Navarazard of Haman Beis. It's the woman that you gave me, Hashem. Hashem, it's your fault because you gave me this woman. Khan Kafur Betova. The very first man who's born into the world to be a Makir Tov is not just not a Makir Tov, but he is what? He is a Kofi Tov. He is Meshmei Shivrua Tachas Tova. And that's why he had to be kicked out of Gan Eden. Writes the Bala Turin. Fascinating Rashi Tevis. Vayomer Adam Aisha Shenasata. That's the Posek in Mishlei, our Posek. Perek Yed Zayin, Posek Yed Gimel. Mei Shivrua Tachas Tova. Lo Tomush Rami Beso. And what are the Sofei Tevos? Take a look at the Sofei Tevos. And what do we have? Sofei Tevos Isha. The end letters of Lo Samush Ra are what? Lo Aleph, Samush Shin, and Ra, the Hey, that spells Isha. And what's going to happen? He blamed it all on the Isha, and that's why the evil now had to come Adam Rishon's way, because he was a Kafri Tov. That is the worst midah that Hashem says, I have no choice but to kick you out of Gan Eden, because you brought evil into my house, into Gan Eden, down here where I placed you in Chava. Mei Shavrot HaChaskova, Alatoma Shomi Beso. That's going to bring evil into your house. Continuing, Pasuk Yudalit. Potamayim Rishis Modon, the beginning of a fight, of a conflict, is what? Is like releasing the water. As the Rishonim explain, Rashi says, Hamaschu B'mariva, you start a fight, who kaposeya chor begidre afpe amas hamayim, v'mayim yotzvo. Imagine there's a big boulder, and it's blocking, it's serving as a dam, and you go and release that boulder, that rock, holding it up, and you release the hole, what do? The hole becomes larger and larger as all the gallons of water rush through. To a fight, a conflict. And the end of the day, a conflict, you start a conflict, it's like releasing water. It starts as one small thing and then it grows gradually and the conflict goes out of control. So what's the advice? Before Hezgala, before it's Lashon Giloy, before it becomes revealed, before it gets out in the open, before that fight, that conflict, that riv, that machlokes gets out, nitosh, and notice the contrast. Lo tomush, same idea. Lo tomush was there, departing over here. It's nitosh is atitosh tosi macha. Abandon it. Get rid of the machlokes. Towards the end of his life, one of the sons of the Chametz Chaim moved to Eretz Yisrael. A true story in Shari Chesed years ago. Rishon Zalman Orbach was close with the son of the Chametz Chaim, and one day he didn't see him in Minyan. And he figured he must not be feeling well. 2 days went by, he said something must be wrong. He sent the shliach, go check where is the son of the Chametz Chaim, and they couldn't find him anywhere. He sent someone on a shlichus, go do research. And they found out that he moved, unbeknownst to everyone in town, he moved to Yafo. Went to Yafo. So they sent somebody after the son of the Chametz Chaim. They said, why'd you move to Yafo? He says, my father, when I went out to saw my father, told me, that wherever you are and wherever you settle, wherever there's machlekes, run as far away as you can. Said the farthest I could run away was to Yafo. There was a machlekes brewing in Shari Chesed at the time, whatever it was, and he ran away to Yafo. Because he says you got to run away from machlekes. You start a machlekes before the argument gets out in the open, and you got to go ahead and nip it in the bud. The Rabbah gets. And he raised some other whom Adrigus Paseach Malkam Yitzimen Omayim. Came Tomer Yachivo Pesach Hu Mitzat Shetef over bowl, like Rashi, because of the flooding waters, the raging flooding waters that are coming through that hole. Gradually, if you don't block it up right away and stop it in its tracks, it Memela is going to cause that hole to widen. Kine Roy Laza Vodara Shosiba Savana Kodesh Yisari Verimach, like, before you get involved, I'll leave it where it is. Kiachase Yishase Tomer Ariv, although Yeshulan Odom Lashkita, you won't even have the ability to quiet it down, you won't be able to silence it. Because we know machlokes can spiral out of control, and once it gets out of control, there's nothing you can do about it anymore. The Gemara Brachos even says, the Gemara Brachos Daf Yud, you don't try and appease someone in a state of anger. And at the end of the day, let them vent, let them get it out of their system, let them get the kasha out of their system, and then go onwards, but don't allow the machlokes to swell. Again, that is something that has to be abandoned. All right, from the very outset, if you want to have a house that is filled with peace and harmony, you got to get rid of all machlekes. Continuing on, Matzdik Rosh HaMashiach Tzadik, someone who justifies and gives a stamp of approval to acts of a Rosha, and the other side of the coin, someone who is Mashiach, someone who makes a Tzadik into a Rosha, that type of person, both people, Tovas Hashem Gam Shneim, they're both an abomination before HaKadosh Baruch Hu. The Rishonim explained the Rabbag and others, because if you're going to give it a stamp of approval, what's going to happen? People are going to look around and say, how come you're honoring that Rasha? How come you're giving such comfort to the Rasha as if the Rasha didn't do anything wrong? And it's going to cause other people to look down and say, you know what? It must be, it's not so bad. It must be, the Rishus is not so terrible. And it loses people's perception of the true face of evil. And so too, a person's a tzaddik, and you're going to go ahead and speak Lashon Hara, and you're going to condemn him, you're going to disparage him, it's destroying the mindless of tzidkus in people's eyes. For that damage, to whom are you doing the real damage? You're doing it to Hashem Yisbarach. Tovas Hashem Gam Shneim. He made a clarity of what's tzidkus and what's rishus, and you're distorting that clarity, and that's going to be the problem. Who is, and is tzidkus level? As a fascinating Medrash Rabbah and Bereishis Rabbah Parsha Samachay and Osvah, Yitzhak Avinu lost his eyesight. Why did he lose his eyesight? One opinion the Medrash says, because he gazed at Esav HaRasha. And he was matzdik the Rasha. And the Medrash even goes on to say that the reason why Rivka had to deceive Yitzchak was to let Yitzchak know that Esav was deceiving him all along. And Yitzchak lost his eyesight, according to one opinion, and not only because of Esav, his wives were mocked at the incense, not only because of the angels cried by Akedas Yitzchak. One opinion the Medrash says, because he gazed at a Rasha, and Esav Rosho, and that causes eyesight to diminish. And that's the punishment that Yitzchak suffered. On a Dak Shevedakas level. So what happened? Because he was Mavdik Rosho, that's why he had to lose his eyesight. And the end of the day, and we know that Asumas Chashav Kameis, Asumas Chashav Kameis, and Adam Samachdal Arbeis, so in the end, Hashem basically took away an aspect of his Shechias and because he was masik the Rosh. That's according to one opinion. The Medrash, again, on a dash of a darkest level, we can't even imagine what that means. We've spoken about how, in the world of Kiyitzchak, again, he was living in the world of Midas Adin, the world of Machshava. As Rosh Shapiro explains, he only saw Esav from the head up. He didn't even pay attention to what was going on with the rest of Esav. But I'll upon him on his unbelievable Madrega of, which we can't begin to fathom, on that Dak Shabadaka's level, he was Matzdik Esav Arosha, and that's why he lost his eyesight. That's why the Bnei Yisoscha writes that by Eicha, when Yirmiyahu laments, what happens? Eini Eini Yordamayim. If we start gazing around at the Rishis, what happens? Eini Eini Yordamayim. That our eyes are going to shed tears, we're going to suffer in our eyes, we're going to keep crying. Eini Eini Yordamayim. And Tomas and Av, those months that correspond to the two Avarim of the eyes, we have to go in and fix those eyes, and we have to make sure to know what Tzidkus is and what Rishus is, and put each one in its place.
Yes, so there's like a conflict. If somebody is full of fury and speaking ill about somebody, and on the one hand, don't fuel the fire and keep quiet. On the other hand,
that's right. Like, so it's not a question of just keeping idle by. Amy Rotson doesn't say, well, just keep quiet. It says, don't go out and try and appease the person. Because if you start trying to appease the person, b'shas kaso, when it subsides, then you're trying to appease. But when a person's in a state of anger, and you don't try and appease them, you let them get it out of their system. The same thing the Chafetz Chaim says, if a person is right away angry and they start saying Lashon Hara, if you know that by hearing the Lashon Hara, only if you're confident that you are mustering up the ability to refuse to believe what they're saying, but let them get it out of their system. Otherwise, they're going to harbor it, there's going to be resentment, and it's going to manifest itself in other ways.
But someone who's like going on about, oh, those rabbis, they,
right,
whatever.
No. So,
okay. They don't want to, they're not open to, you know, like,
right, so again, you can't do shtika, because then shtika goes, no, it's a question of not appeasing. It's a question of maybe saying, look, there's a time to deal with it, maybe go to this person, talk to this person about it, has a time and a place to go and deal with it. The main hakpot is emiratzen l'b'shas kaso. That means b'shas kaso, we don't do it, or we don't get involved, and the racious model, in the beginning of machlokas, before his galar, before the machlokas, gets out of control, abandon it. If you could stop it from getting out of control, then certainly try and get out of control, but don't try and do it b'shas kaso. If somebody closes the door on someone's hand, then I'm ready to hear just now, you know, I'm ready to forgive. But in the end of the day, forgiving and moving on is a huge thing.
And if they're drawing an audience?
No, then you should try. If they're causing this galera, so they're causing it to get out of control. Okay. If they're causing it to get out of control, then you should try and put a stop to it. The point is, stay away from machlaikas. Abandon machlaikas. Don't add fuel to the fire. But again, each case really needs its own set of rules and guidelines. That's all going to depend on the situation. It's going to depend on the relationship that you have with that person. Can you say something? Are they going to be makabel from you? If they're not going to be makabel, they're not going to be makabel. But if it's going to be a case of shtika, so the Chafetz Chaim even deals with that. What if you're stuck in the back seat of the car? Chafetz Chaim says, and you have two people sitting on either side, and they're saying Lashon Hara to one another. Well, you can't run out of the car. If you could tell the driver, stop, and you could get out, that's when you have to run away from Machlokas. So what does the Chafetz Chaim say to do? He says, first thing, you have to muster up the strength that are refusing to believe anything that they say. Again, if you could say something and stop them in a kind way, and they'll be Mekamot HaChacha, that's fine. And if not, you have to frown and show signs that what they're doing is wrong and what they're doing is terrible. You can't show any sign of acceptance. So you know you can't be mochiach them because they're not going to listen. It's going to fuel the fire. But you can have a shtika kodos. So you show facial expressions that clearly indicate that you do not approve at all of what they're doing. And one final pasuk for today, v'siyata d'shmaya, alam hazeh mechir b'yad k'sil, liknos chokhma avlev ayin. And why should mechir, money, a charge, why should we go ahead and have money and the hands of a fool in order to go out and acquire chachmah levayim, but he doesn't have a leif, he doesn't have a leif maven, he doesn't have a heart of understanding. What is he really missing? Rashi says, what is he missing? Levayim ain't believable akaimo. His heart is not interested in keeping any of the mitzvahs. He doesn't want to learn. Ain't a lo my Torah and lelikin Hashem. He just wants to acquire a name for himself. And that type of person, it's not kedai to have that chokhmah, and that's how Rashi's learning. Rabbeinu Yonah says, not just that it's not kedai, because the person has the wrong reasons. Rabbeinu Yonah says, leif ayin means he doesn't have a good heart, he doesn't have a leif tov, he doesn't have the midos tovos, he doesn't have the derech eretz kavod in the Torah. Shmos, Parshas Bo begins with the first mitzvah given to Klai Yisrael in its entirety. Famous kasha of Rashi, in the end of they, many Mepharshim say, you know why the Torah had to begin with the Sefer HaAvos? Because we had to learn the Midos of Avraham, Yitzchak, and Yaakov. Sorek HaRachalei, we had to learn about the Midos because Derech Eretz comes the Torah. First comes the Midos, right? Rabbeinu Yonah and his Perush HaMishlei. If you don't have a lev, then you can't even start to acquire Chochmah. First comes the seat of the Midos. That's the pedestal upon which you can go on and place the Torah Kadosha. Without the Midos, there's nothing to talk about. Ibn Ezra learns, what's the lev? What's in the heart? The lev, that's the chayfetz. A chokhmah lev, Rav Chaim Shmulevitz explained to the people that want the chokhmah in their heart. So the Ibn Ezra says, lev ayin means they don't have a heart, they don't have a tshuka, they don't have a chayfetz, they don't really want it. They don't want the Torah, they don't want to have the mitzvah, Hashem, so don't bother giving them the money to acquire the chokhmah, they're not interested in it. And the Gemara in Yumai and Beis Amud Beis says, it's a reference to Yerushamayim. A lev ayin, you can have all the chokhmah in the world, but if you don't have Yerushamayim, as the Gemara says in Shabbos Lamed Aleph, the chokhmah is not going to last, it's not going to stay. And finally, the Chumash Tanach, the Chidah. The Chidah writes in his Chumash Tanach, Perish on Tanach. And he says that lev ayin is a question of where is the heart? You have a fool and he has money. He has money, he wants to acquire Chachmah. Let's say he's foolish mentally and he can't acquire the Chachmah. What do? Support someone who can. Make a Yisocher Zvulun and support someone, contribute to Batik and Asiyas. And both in Rosh is the places that can go ahead and learn, and you'll get the schar. Now, there's a big machlokas when you set up a Yisachar Zvulun, or you give money to a yeshiva. Are you getting the schar 50-50, or is it 100-100? Everyone agrees that by husband and wife, Noshim Vaizachyon, a wife who encourages her husband or children to learn, and that's split 100-100. But what about when you support someone, it's a machlokas, whether it's 50-50, or whether it's 100-100? Achidah writes, Hashem gave you money. He gave you money, so why did he give it into the hand of Exil to acquire Chachov Levayim? Where is the heart? Meaning, what are you waiting for? There are some people who, after they finally wake up, then they say, oh, now let me give money to yeshivas. Don't wait until you have to. Don't wait until you get simanim, until Hashem sends you signs. If right now you have the money, you should go b'kumiyaseh and be mashiv and actively go and support yeshivas and support people learning Torah. If you can't get the chachmah, at least give it to people who can acquire the chachmah. I heard a beautiful idea. With this, we'll close with David Feinstein. We know that every shevet had a color, every shevet had a symbol. Medrashim, Bamidbar, Rabban, Parsha Beis, and Ozayin, all different flags. And Rabbi Yaakov Kamenetsky beautifully points out in his first piece in Emesh Yaakov and Parsha Bamidbar, why didn't we get the flags right away? We know that by Yam Suf, we walked in 12 different pathways. We already knew we had the Yirbei Shvatim. Only once we set up the Mishkan did we get flags and symbols. Why? Because having a flag, having a color, having a symbol says there's a tuna, something miyuchad to me. There's something special to me. This is my symbol. The shore is going to be Yosef HaTzadik, and the wolf is going to be Binyamin Zev Yitrov. Everyone has an animal. Everyone has a symbol. We know that's how nations will have to identify themselves. Right? A nation has a flag, and a nation has a color, or sometimes an animal, the eagle, whatever it's going to be. So, right, Rav Yaakov Kamenetsky, you can't highlight your sense of individuality at the outset when you became an Am. Why? Because then you're going to lose sight of the greater, larger picture. You're going to see the tree, but you're going to ignore the forest. Therefore, Hashem says, first build the Mishkan. First encamp as a unified, cohesive group, encircling the Mishkan, encircling the Aron, the Torah, the Luchos, and Shevei Luchos. And only when you realize you're all going to be encamped around the Aron, with the Torah as the centerpiece, then you can highlight your Anochius, your Atzmius, your sense of self, your sense of individuality. You'll highlight that only after you first come together around the Torah. That's going to be Ma'achei de Lubavos. And then, you're right, then you can start. You'll have Kishach HaBalevachon. You'll perpetuate that the milestone of Kishach HaBalevachon on a Yom Yomi, on a day-to-day basis with the building of the Mishkan. You'll encamp and encircle the Mishkan, thus encamp and encircle the Aron HaKodesh. And Mela, now you can highlight your sense of self. So every Shevet had its own a unique symbol. What was Zvulun? Zvulun was L'chof Yom Mishkan. They were what? They were the boat traveling out to the rough and turbulent seas. As to David Feinstein, Zvulun is giving up so much of their money. They're supporting Yisachar Chamagorim. They're sitting and learning. And why shouldn't God make it easy for Zvulun? After all, if Yisachar is sitting and learning, and they're giving up of their money to split all the schar, it's not easy. It's not easy to give up all your hard-earned money and to give it to the people that are sitting and learning it to support the Torah. So why not make it easy? Why not Hashem give them real estate? You know what? Instead of Reuven, Gad, and Chatzi, Sheva, Menashe, give all the real estate to Zvulun, and don't even have to worry about the shepherds. Give them a company where it's a shepherd company, and they just have to pay the bills, and they could sit in a nice plush leather chair and a penthouse apartment in Fifth Avenue or in Madison, and let them just relax and take it easy and write checks. Why didn't Hashem have to have them go out to the stormy seas? Explain to a David Feinstein. Because Zvulun was sitting comfortable. You know what happens as time goes on? I'm working for this money. Why am I giving it away to this yeshiva? Why do I have to give my money away to this person and to this and support in this yeshiva? And you start asking questions. I'm working hard and they're saying, why should I have to go and support? Why should I have to help them out parnasa-wise? Hashem says, you know what? I'm going to send you out to the rough, turbulent waters. And when the pirates are chasing after you, and when the waves are coming up 20 feet on the sides of the boat, and the boat is rocking back and forth, and you're screaming up to Shem, Hashem, please, please save me. Oh, wait, Hashem, save me in the schus of all the title of Yisachar. Please, Hashem, rescue me from the pirates. Please, don't let the boat go under. Don't let it capsize. Please, all in the merit of the Torah. That's going to make them always cry out to Hashem, and that's going to make them always remember the schus of Torah that they had a chelek in. Explain with David Feinstein, that's why Hashem says, go out to the rocky waters. Because in the end of the day, we know no atheists in the foxholes. And when you're crossing that bridge of rocky waters, in the end of the day, oh God, I'll change my life. I'll do everything. I will never go ahead. I'll never eat ice cream again. I won't have 3 slices of pizza. I won't get 10 toppings on my yogurt. I won't watch this. I won't go here. Oh, and then you get to the other side. Oh, great, I'm alive. God, about those deals, we'll renegotiate. I had an ace Torah. Hashem says, every time the boat is rocking back and forth and you're getting seasick, Hashem, b'schus the Torah, please, go in and save me. That's why it's got to be Yisachar's will. But the Chiddush says, Levayin, if you have the heart of understanding, don't wait. Don't wait until the last minute. You need to have the schus. Have that lev that understands the value of the chachma and wants to have a chelek in that. And emet Hashem, we will continue. And next week I will be out of town. And then Memorial Day, we have a special guest, Rabbi Moshe Weinberger, speaking here to men and women on Memorial Day in the morning. So we will resume emet Hashem the first Monday in June. Beis Hashem Yisbar. So again, no class next Monday. We resume in the middle of Perek Yud Zayin Yud Zayin 17:17. Emet Hashem. 3 weeks.
Are you going to be next week?